Have you ever caught yourself thinking your partner's silence means that they're mad at you, or a single sigh proves that they don't care? Well, we've all been there, and it can turn one of these little small moments into a relationship wrecking machine. Today on Master Your Marriage, we're diving into part three of our communication series to uncover why everyday judgments sabotage intimacy and closeness. And we'll share a game-changing story from the nonviolent communication founder that might just save your next conversation. Stick with us. It's going to be a ride you won't want to miss. That's what's up next on Master Your Marriage.
Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Charla Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
So I was working with a new couple recently, and I began the session, as I often do, with a question. And I asked them, so how can I help? And after a quiet pause, a long pause, one of them spoke up and said, I think we just really need help with our communication. We just have such very different ways of communicating and different ways of dealing with conflict. And so after getting a little bit more information from both of them about their patterns in their relationship, I turned to him and I said, so what do you see as your role in these particular patterns?
Ooh, that's a hard one.
He kind of recoiled a little bit, and then he kind of looked remorseful to me. And he said, you know, I honestly think that I have just never been conscious of how I communicate. I just do it without thinking. And it's not just in my marriage. It's probably in all my relationships, honestly. And it's probably the core of all of my issues.
Wow.
Yeah. Some deep reflection there.
I think it's the same thing. I don't think most of us think about the way that we communicate.
Exactly. Right? And that might be the problem.
Yeah. And the way that he was communicating has been very costly. Costly when it comes to his relationship, his marriage. Costly when it comes to his relationship with his children. And costly when his friendships and even in business relationship. Today's episode is part three of our new series on communication. And it's shaping up to possibly be one of the best in our series yet. In part one, we talked about the cost of not speaking up in your relationship, which is simply not an option if you want to have a true partnership.
Yep.
In part two, we said that all communication needs to meet three objectives. One, it should increase mutual understanding. Two, it should promote better communication. And three, it should create more empathy. Now, in part three on our series in communication, we're zeroing in on judgments. And how pervasive judgments are in our everyday language, which ultimately sabotages our relationship goals and prevents us from experiencing intimacy and closeness that we crave in these relationships.
But first, our favorite part.
Oh, yeah.
Our weekly podcast review giveaway. And, you know, just as a reminder, you guys, your reviews are so important to making this show a success. And here is why. When Apple and Spotify see more reviews, they're more likely to feature our show in its recommendations list. And that helps more couples like you to find our show and to discover these tools just as you have. So here's how it works. Briefly, just head over to the Master Your Marriage podcast on Apple, scroll down on the main page all the way to the bottom, and you'll see stars. If you tap all five stars, you can then drop a quick sentence or two into the review box. And then each week we will pick one to read on the air. And if you hear yours, you can email us at masteryourmarriage@gmail.com, and we will send you a little thank you gift for being a loyal listener.
Okay, here's the cool one. You read this review to me when it came in, and I think it's been a little bit, but it was so awesome. I'd love to share this with you guys today. This week's review comes from Mimi Jan 67, and she said, my husband and I have been in ministry and counseling situations for many years, and we love the Master Your Marriage podcast. You both are so transparent and relatable. The content and takeaways are both informative and implementable in our relationships, which then allows us to share the information from firsthand experience. We recently had a 12-hour road trip and listened to this podcast the entire trip.
I love that. Yeah.
and we felt like we had enjoyed a little mini marriage retreat, and it provoked thoughts and conversation that helped us put language to some of the situations, which after 35 years of marriage was so helpful. Thank you so much for your podcast.
So awesome. I love that. What a great idea to create your own marriage retreat by taking a road trip, listening to a relationship podcast along the way. I mean, it's free and you're together and you can have these great discussions. So why not?
I think it's awesome. So if that was your review, email us to claim your prize. And if not, your review could be up next. It takes just a few seconds and you can help us get the word out about the podcast.
All right. So let's dive back into today's show. And what we're going to be doing today is deconstructing judgments, what they are, why we use them, and ultimately how destructive they really are to having the kind of relationship that we all want. Let's start with the definition. So I guess I would say a simple definition of what a judgment is basically anything you think, even inside your own mind, or say out loud, where you're slapping a label or a diagnosis on someone based on what that person said or did.
Oh, the world loves diagnosis.
Oh, we do, don't we?
Social media. I can't even remember how many times I see it. It's like, are you dating a narcissist?
I know.
Oh my gosh.
Let me just help you to diagnose them with my 30-second reel. So a little bit maybe more of a complex definition is any evaluative statement or even a thought that labels, categorizes, or assigns meaning to someone else's feelings, their actions, or even their intentions. And the problem with these judgments is that normally they typically imply fault. I'm blaming you with my judgment. They also usually refer to someone's character and attack someone's character. And they also kind of make that character flaw out to be something that's fixed, that isn't changeable. It's just now who they are. And I love the idea that, I try to remember this often, that people are not their behaviors.
Absolutely.
People are, you know, one thing, but the behavior that they might be doing in that moment, you know, who knows what it's being caused by, but be able to separate the person from their behavior.
That is so hard. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
In nonviolent communication, we like to look at judgments as being conflict escalating.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning that when we are making judgments, we are escalating conflict. They make conflict worse. And not only that, you know, if you go back to what Robert said a moment ago about what our three goals are for communication, it doesn't meet any of those objectives. When we use judgments, we're not empathetic, we're not more connected, and we're not increasing the mutual understanding between the two of us.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you're saying is judgments destroy our connection and our closeness and make your conflict a whole lot worse?
A whole lot worse. Okay.
Good. So let's look at where this language of judgment comes from, because it's inundated in everything that we do. And it's probably more prevalent in the English language, where we're wired to speak in these judgment statements. There are so many labels out there that we throw around without thinking. We use words like lazy or selfish without even giving it a second thought. So now let's unpack how we get indoctrinated into the language of judgments. It starts early at home with our families. Growing up, we hear all kinds of things, and they could be you're being naughty or you're such a good kid. And even these subtle, seemingly innocuous comments start teaching us to see behavior as a reflection of who someone is, not just what that someone is doing. We are quick to pin labels on people sort of to make sense of the world. And we see things as good or bad or right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Then you get a little older and now there's the media that we're soaked in, the TV, movies, news, social media, which if you think about it, just scroll for a couple seconds, it is full of heroes and villains, winners and losers. You know, just take a few look at a few political posts, for examples, and you'll see that. And think about just how often you hear someone maybe in the media or television described as a label like arrogant. You know, that person is arrogant. That person is stingy. You know, without really digging into, is that true? Is that really true? Could it have been something else? What am I really seeing? Are they really being arrogant? What might have caused them to even act that way? Instead, it's just easier to characterize people as you're broken, you're crooked, you're a narcissist. And I think it just comes from our culture. Western culture especially, we love to tell these stories that are all built in black and white categories, black and white.
Heroes and villains. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that trains our brain to think this way, to think in judgments, rather than being able to just simply observe the behaviors that we're seeing. It even fuels that fire even more because we love to add these emphasis words like always, never, should. And so it just makes it really easy to say things without really consciously thinking about it. Like my client I mentioned, yeah. I just say it. I don't think about it. And then the next thing I know, I'm saying, you're so lazy. You never help me. Instead of, I noticed the dishes were left undone today.
Yeah. I don't know if that works for me, the judgment thing.
Tell me.
For me, I think the observation's a little bit more introspective. Because if I notice you left the dishes undone, I'm like, okay, well, I probably can accept that. That seems like I did that. I can probably own that because I'm a big believer in owning my stuff.
Whereas
if you said you're so lazy, that's just a judgment. I'm like, that's on you. Bye. Like it's just going to roll right off my back. So if you give me a judgment for me and who I am and where I am in my life, and I realize what judgments are, I'm just like, they're innocuous. Like you're lazy. I'm not. Thank you for your input. Bye now.
So what you're saying is that it's a lot easier for you to take accountability and responsibility and to actually look at yourself more honestly when you hear an observation.
Well, I think I get less defensive, right? Right away, when there's a judgment, my walls are up, like, and you're done.
That's really good feedback. I mean, if we want our partner to hear us and take our feedback in a way that they might actually do something with that feedback, what you're saying is don't deliver it in a judgment because I'm going to tune you out right away.
Yeah. And probably that's what happens. You think about judgments that, I mean, there's a lot of people who live to please others. Mm-hmm. And maybe that would be, you know, that would also be very hurtful. So either it's hurtful or walls go up, one of the two.
Yeah. For you, walls.
For me, walls go up.
I hear a judgment or you hear a judgment. All of a sudden, it's like, wah, 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 like yeah, on Charlie
Brown.
I know
you're saying something, but let me roll my window up again so I can't hear you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's not forget about our school education and religious indoctrination and where we're graded and ranked and we're told that we're either smart or slacking or sinful or righteous. And I remember as a kid being in school, and I think we've all had this experience. I remember there was a kid, I think when I was in kindergarten, I'm trying to remember where it was, but we'll just call it school. This image of a teacher saying, you're a bad boy. And the boy was crying. He's like, I'm not a bad boy. And that might be a movie. It's just somewhere in my brain. I thought about that as the inability to separate the action from the person.
Right.
And that child is now assuming that he is his actions. Mm-hmm. And that's not something we want to imprint, not on our kids.
So just think about how early that starts. You know, yeah. 5 years old, kindergarten.
But think about this kid who's grown up having people tell him that his actions are who he is. And even though he maybe disregards that, I'm not that bad person. I'm taught to throw those judgments around to other people.
Exactly.
Right out of the gate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're making all these internal judgments about other people and ourselves based on our indoctrination based on these black and white categories that we've been given. So it's no wonder that if you think about it, like when we get flooded, for example.
Yeah.
What happens when we get flooded?
Judgments come out. We can't do simple observations, which we're going to talk about. But judgments just come out. Harshness comes out. We start using always, never, you.
Because that's how we're trained to not only speak, it's how we're trained to think. And of course, all good logic goes out the window when we're flooded. What we're going to be left with is our programming.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So that's why, you know, when I shared the story at the beginning of the episode, my client was saying, you know, I honestly think that I've just never been conscious about how I communicate. It really is true, especially if your relationship has a lot of stress in it and there's a lot of conflict going on where you're getting flooded all the time, you're not going to be conscious of it. You're just going to react and just say whatever comes to mind. And, you know, as we've alluded to already, when we do this and we speak unconsciously and just automatically, it can be really damaging to those that we love. When we speak without awareness, we start to lean on making shortcuts. It's so much easier to just say, he's rude. He's a jerk. You know, he's a narcissist. He's sloppy. You know, whatever it is, it's so easy to just put two words on it, slap this label on it and move on rather than trying to figure out what might really be going on with that person inside of them. What might they be needing? What are they feeling? Are they stressed? Maybe he's not being rude. Maybe he's just stressed out. Maybe he had a need in that particular moment that wasn't being met and it was really stressful. But all of that takes so much more effort and patience and presence. So it's just much easier to let our conditioning take over and pathologize all the people that are around us, because it's a shortcut.
Simple, quick. And that's really sort of what the English language does. The English language of all the languages has lots of shortcuts.
You have a really good story, actually, to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. So I love this story.
I love the story.
Yeah, this one's cool. So I know we're talking about English language, and I'm sort of reminded of this story from Marshall Rosenberg, who's the founder of nonviolent communication. So Marshall was in Malaysia, if I remember right, and yep. He was teaching a workshop there, and his translator came up to him and said, hey, I need to kind of just give you a heads up. In our language, we don't have a verb for to be when you're judging people. So if you use judgmental language, it will be really hard for me to translate it. Hmm. Rosenberg was pretty curious, and he said, well, so as an example, how would you translate you are selfish? And the translator said, well, that's challenging because we don't think that way. I want you to hold on to that. We don't think that way. Instead, I would have to say something like, Dr. Rosenberg sees you taking care of your needs, but not taking care of the needs of others. And he would like you to take care of the needs of others as well. And that's sort of a mouthful as compared to just being selfish. Hence why oftentimes in the English language and other languages, we take the shortcut.
Yeah, think about all those words you had to say to translate you are selfish.
But I like just the fact that in our language, we don't think of selfishness that way.
So I think that's what hit me the most about that story when I first heard it was the translator saying, we just don't think that way. And that I actually shared the story with our teenager. I shared it with Dallin, and I said, how would it be so different if we actually didn't think the way that we think? And I don't know about you, but I spend time around kids because we have a teenager. And so if you just listen to how they even speak to each other, sometimes it can be pretty cruel.
Oh, it's harsh.
It's you're ugly, you're mean, you're fat. Well, what do you think you are? You're like, you're just a know-it-all, you know? And so
you're a pick me.
You're a pick me. Yeah. That's a new one I had to get defined for me recently. I guess it just made me think, what would the world be like if we weren't trained to think this way? Would we be a kinder people? Would we be a more compassionate people?
Yeah, that story just pretty much flipped the switch for me. I realized how much our language, the English language, steers us toward judgment. And I think back to maybe earlier in our marriage, and Charlotte's tone would get a little sharp, and I would make an assumption. Well, she's mad at me. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, well, she's mad at me. She's just nagging. This is not really me, right? And then I'd get defensive. But as I've studied and learned and tried to learn more and practice more of nonviolent communication, I've tried to pause and ask myself, what did I really hear? What did I actually hear? What were the words? And what did I just observe without adding any color or lens or interpretation to it? Maybe her tone was sharp because she was stressed. Maybe she just got off a difficult phone call or something. Maybe she's not angry with me. But when I labeled her and I gave this immediate judgment, then instead I just shut her out. I never really got curious.
Mm. And I think that example is so key to this conversation, because judgments just close the door. They just put up the walls. Whereas observations tend to tear those walls down, open those doors up, and bring us back more into connection. Yeah. And I love how Rosenberg puts this, and he says this beautifully. He says, judgments disconnect us from our partner's needs and their humanity, which is what you just described when you said, you know, if I label her as nagging, then all of a sudden I don't have to worry about whether she had some stresses going on in her life. I could just label her as the bad person and go about my day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think of it this way. It's just another Robertism. Judgment creates obstacles to communication and intimacy in communication. Whereas
observation
creates opportunities.
Oh, that was a lot of O's.
Yeah.
Observations create opportunities. Yeah. They do. When we label someone, we're not being curious about what's going on for them.
Yeah.
You know, instead we just put them in this box. You are selfish. You are nagging and in this box. And here, I can just send this box off and they're the problem. I'm not the problem. I like the analogy you gave earlier about how I don't need to take responsibility for it anymore. I can just push it away.
It's a judgment. It's not me.
Yeah.
That's you. You made the judgment. So there are some good things here. There's some good news. To shift our communication, it will just take some unlearning and you're going to have to practice that. But we can lean into nonviolent communication here to get some help. Let's get practical now. How do we break this habit of being judgmental or judging? The first step in nonviolent communication is to use observations instead of judgments. Try to think of yourself as a reporter. And you remember those days back in high school, they told you to write like a reporter. I just want you to, you know, just the facts, ma'am. I want you to pretend that you're looking through the lens of a camera and it's just going to be, what did you see? What did you hear? Specifically, what was said? And avoid the temptation to color this at all.
Color it like with always and nevers and shoulds.
Yeah, always and nevers and should and would have and you didn't try or whatever.
So make observations instead of judgments. I mean, that seems so simple. So straightforward, so easy.
It's not any of those things.
But because you were trained to speak when you were 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, that is not so easy to do, especially when things get heated, when conversations become difficult. It is actually so much harder than it sounds. You know, oftentimes I'll be working with a couple and we might take an entire session. Most of my sessions are 60 to 90 minutes. Sometimes we'll take an entire session just to try to work through speaking without judgments and just delivering a simple 5 or 6 sentences without filling them full of judgments.
Yeah.
And it can sometimes take that entire time just to eke out one sentence because that's just not how we're conditioned to speak or to think. And so what I did this week, actually, I put together a brand new workbook. And it's 13 pages long and you can download that right now. It just became available in our stand store for $4. And inside of it, there are several exercises and tons of different phrases with questions and an answer key so that you can go through and start to retrain yourself. Like Robert said, it's going to take a lot of unlearning. I think it would be fun to do a little practice. Just to see, this is actually harder than you think. Do you want to start us out with one phrase?
Yep, I got one.
Okay.
I got one. You ready?
Yeah.
So, Sharla, I noticed that you sighed heavily when I asked for help with the kids.
Okay.
So, is this a judgment or an observation?
You noticed that I sighed heavily when you asked for help with the kids. That is a that's actually an observation. Am I right?
You are. You're correct.
So why is that an observation? It's an observation because it's just describing what I saw. I noticed that you sighed heavily when I asked you for help with the kids. Now, I'm not interpreting that.
Right.
You're not interpreting that. You're just telling me what you observed. So that is an observation.
Because it's describing a specific behavior without adding evaluation.
Without evaluation, without conclusions, without making it about my character.
Yeah, without any character attachment. I don't want to say assassination, but without any character attachment, as in you are this thing.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Let's do another one.
Okay. You go.
You're annoyed with me all the time. You're annoyed with me all the time. Is that an observation or is that a judgment?
Well, I stopped listening at the word you're because it sounded like a judgment.
Uh-huh.
And then annoyed.
Annoyed.
Yeah.
And then the all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
So that had some. When
you don't know I'm annoyed.
There's three good tip-offs there in that sentence.
I may be stressed. I may be overtaxed. I may be in low bandwidth. I mean, there's a lot of things I may be.
So what did you actually observe?
Yep.
I noticed that you took a deep breath or that you sighed or that you rolled your eyes. Just look at it through the lens of the camera.
Yeah.
What did you actually see? This is the challenging part because it's like, no, I can't actually separate what I thought versus what I saw. And that's the challenge people have. So in the first ones, let's go back up a little bit. So in that first phrase that you gave, which was, I noticed that you took a sigh when I asked for help with the kids.
No diagnosis there.
You're just saying it what happened and you're open to other possibilities. you're leaving the door open to actually other interpretations, other meanings. You're just saying, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. Yeah. But the second phrase that we did, you're just annoyed all the time. That's assuming that that sigh meant annoyed.
Right.
And I'm assuming that emotion that I saw was annoyance. And now you're in this fight over meanings.
Oh,
a sigh means annoyed.
Okay. How many times have we had a disagreement in our history where, and I may or may not be annoyed, and then you come up and you would in the past, not nearly as much now, but in the past, and say, I don't know why you're so mad at me, or, you know, or why you're so
annoyed with me all the time.
Annoyed with me all the time. And then we would get into an argument about how I'm not annoyed with you.
I'm not annoyed. Yes, you are. I'm not. Yes,
I am
you
now.
Are. But you know what? It, again, going back to Dr. Rosenberg's quote, it cuts us off from our partner's needs and their humanity, because what are we not talking about? If we're arguing over whether a sigh is annoyance or not annoyance, what are we actually not talking about?
We're talking about how we can help them or what's wrong with them. We're not being curious.
We're not being curious when in fact, maybe the sigh was just like stress.
Yeah.
And maybe there was another need there that we could have been talking about and solving. Instead, we're now locked into a fight over meanings.
I actually just thought of one because it happened earlier while we were talking about this. I yawned a bit and I covered it up. And think about how many times, especially when you're with your partner and they're a little bit angry, mm-hmm. and you're having a tough conversation and you yawn and I'm like, are you bored with this conversation? He's like, no, I got up at 6 a.m. to work out. And I'm a little tired.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not annoyed. I'm tired.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do another example.
Okay.
Okay. Judgment. You guys decide at home. Judgment or observation?
Ooh.
You're obsessed with work. You're obsessed with work. Sometimes these are really tricky. Sometimes these are really tricky because that could feel very true to someone.
Right.
You know, I mean, is that really true? That should be maybe the first thought. Is that actually true? And so first of all, what is it? Is it a judgment or an observation?
It's a judgment.
It's a judgment.
Yeah.
Why?
Diagnosis.
Because you're saying it, you are giving a diagnosis that this person is obsessed. That could devolve into a fight. Likely it would devolve into a fight over meanings. I'm not obsessed. Yes, you are. Well, you worked this many hours. No, I didn't. When what was the probable need that this person...
Somebody probably had a need. I just feel disconnected. I want to hug you. I want to sit on the couch with you. I need more time. It could be any of those things.
How much better would it have been to just have that conversation? I miss you. I love you. I want to spend time with you. Can we snuggle on the couch instead of you're obsessed with your work?
Yeah. Now, one will get you what you want. The other will definitely not get you what you want.
Exactly.
I think maybe the listeners can figure out which is which.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's try a little mini exercise now. Take this judgment. You're always dismissive.
You're always dismissive.
So pause for a second and think. What might be the observation that you could say instead?
So right away, we know we're making a diagnosis. If I say you're being dismissive,
yep.
I am making a diagnosis. So what might be another option?
I know. Here's a possibility. I noticed that you said no to my last two ideas for our weekend plans.
Okay. So try those two on. You're so dismissive versus I noticed that you said no to the last two ideas that I presented right. for us to do this weekend.
Yeah.
Does one feel more attacking, less
yeah,
attacking?
Without a doubt.
One more accusing. So one is just sharing what you saw, which opens the door to be able to have alternate realities.
And it builds valid. it builds a real conversation.
And it builds real conversation.
Opportunities, observations,
so
great
here's,
opportunities.
Here's something else to think about. And this is something I talk about in the workbook that I made this week. There's a man by the name of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, and he wrote a book called Flow. And in this book, he shares that every second of every day, we are bombarded with 2 million bits of data per second that's coming into what we, our five senses, what we see, hear, smell, touch, taste. But we can only actually consciously pay attention to and process about 126 bits out of that 2 million bits of information, which means we are constantly filtering out reality and we are deleting information. And so even when we make an observation and even when we do our best to make it as objective as possible, it is still missing truth. There are still pieces of that puzzle that we did not see, a lot of it that we did not see. And so we even want to be careful when we're making these objective observations as objectively as we can, remember that we still don't have the whole picture. You know, what else might I have missed? What did I really see? What did I really hear? And one of the, I think, the bitter pills we ask couples to swallow is the idea that there is no objective reality in relationships. It's subjective. And neither of us have a God camera.
That's
neither of us see
so
everything.
So hard when one of them is so sure they're right in the couples.
It is. Yeah. But can we remember that our reality is limited, and I can lay my reality down on the table and say, this is what I saw, heard, and maybe I missed something, but to the best of my recollection, this is what I have. And then you're able to stay curious, lay down on the table your pieces, what you saw and heard. Maybe you got 126 bits, I didn't. And we can start to complete the puzzle together.
Well, it's different. I just thought about this analogy we talked about earlier, was when I'm taking my observation, it's at best a sketch, an incomplete sketch in black and white, where I've just outlined something. And I hand it to you and I ask you to color in the details.
I love that. I love that. But you know what? As you say that, I'm picturing that, like, you lay a sketch down. But if you think about 126 bits of information versus 2 million bits of information, it's not even a sketch. It's like one of those dot to dot, connect the dots, where there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you lay it down and there's dots, and I have to connect the dots, and then we color it in.
Well, and I think even probably worse than that, it is a dot to dot connection without the numbers.
Without the numbers.
And I hand it to you and you're like, oh, it's an elephant, we're going on safari. And I flip it upside down and say, no, it's a yacht, we're going on a cruise.
Right.
It's right. All about perception. And everybody takes it in so differently. And then everybody colors differently as well.
Right. Right. So that really is, that's powerful to think about that way. If I can stay emotionally regulated and open and curious to taking in more information, Robert gives me something and I can look at it and go, these are the dots. Okay, we're going to connect dots together and we're going to color this in together. And maybe we can add and create and increase the intelligence between us because we're working with different perspectives that complete that picture.
So the power of observations are that they create space for us to add more data, to add more color to your understanding. And as always, we have a challenge for you this week. Start practicing this every day, even in small moments. When you're annoyed, pause. Ask yourself, okay, what judgments am I adding here? What am I making here? And then how can I reframe my thinking into more of an objective observation? And then write it down if you need to. As you keep doing this, it will become a little bit more second nature. And it will lead to far better communication because you'll be able to make clear observations. You'll be able to make better pictures.
I love that. Better pictures.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. And the workbook is really going to help be a game changer to help you to improve your communication and to avoid these judgments and these traps that we fall into. So there's lots of different exercises in there, ideas for how to reframe your thoughts and your words. I've got a chart in there with like the old way we used to speak versus the new way. So go ahead and jump over to our Stand store and grab that download. It's going to be a great companion to this episode.
Absolutely. So let's wrap this up. Take the challenge this week and try making at least one observation instead of a judgment. Maybe your partner leaves the clothes on the floor and instead of saying, you know, you are a slob, say, you know, I noticed your clothes are on the bedroom floor this morning. So I want you to share what happens. Email us at masteryourmarriage@gmail.com and or come over to Instagram @masteryourmarriage. And we'd love to hear how this shifts your conversations and your relationship.
Perfect. I think that's a wrap.
That should be
it. Remember to be kind to each other this week. Put each other first. Remember, it's the small things done often that create the biggest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. Just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.